It's been 20 years since four giant badminton birdies landed on the lawn of the Nelson Atkins Museum. At first, a lot of people thought the shuttlecocks were weird or made a mockery of the stately building behind them. But over the years, we've become drawn to them.
Good afternoon. This is Nelson Atkins Museum Security. We're going to ask that you please do not climb on our sculptures. Thank you very much. We sure appreciate it.
Perhaps too drawn to them.
The shuttlecocks are absolutely a draw. They become such a familiar icon in Kansas City that people almost always want to get their photograph taken with them. So they get a lot of attention.
Mike Cross is head of security at the Nelson. From a secret security station, his staff keeps a close eye on the shuttlecocks day and night.
Each one has its own individual security system. It's a motion detector cable all the way around it, so we know when somebody's getting close. If you've just crossed and are taking a photograph with the shuttlecock but not doing anything inappropriate, you'll never hear from us. If you've decided to go for a climb, you'll hear a voice, a disembodied voice, asking you to not do that.
Of course, taking photos with the shuttlecocks has become a Kansas City tradition.
My favorite photograph is somebody entitled it Game Over, and it looks like they're laying underneath a giant shuttlecock and they've been squished in the head. So that was my favorite.
Other shuttlecock traditions are a bit more risque.
Many Kansas Cityans like to sneak onto the grounds late at night to cuddle on the grounds of the Nelson Atkins. So we're aware of that, and as long as nobody's interfering with the artwork, we try to leave folks alone for the most part.
Good morning and welcome to Central Standard. I'm Gina Kaufman. With the shuttlecocks celebrating their 20th anniversary, we've invited a couple of guests to the studio to reflect on how the public's relationship with those sculptures has changed. And Jan Shaw, you're a curator of modern and contemporary art for the Nelson Atkins Museum. Maybe you could start by telling us about the shuttlecocks artistically. Who are the artists?
The artists are Klaus Oldenburg and his late wife now, Koja van Bruggen. And they are world-renowned, have sculptures all over the world. And Klaus made the breakthrough with sculptures like the shuttlecocks, taking small things and turning them into monumental works, at the same time upsetting the whole notion of what a monument is. So they have sculptures in major cities and at major universities and museums throughout the world. Fantastic. We're lucky to have them.
When you talk about upsetting the notion of what a monument is, can you explain that a little bit?
Well, typically when people say a monument, they mean a monument to somebody or something. So it's something to remember. So, we talk about the Vietnam Veterans Memorial Monument or the Washington Monument or the Lincoln Monument and so forth. And so those are things that really celebrate an individual or an event or mark an occasion in some way. And they take on a quality of grandeur, large scale, but they are specific to an event, perhaps.
Mm-hmm. What do we need to know about the sculptures themselves in terms of aesthetics, materials, and perhaps even artistic intent?
Well, the artistic intent was to be playful, to introduce something to the Nelson Atkins that was a response to the building, to the site, to Kansas City. All of those things I think we could talk about a little bit more detail as we go forward. But in terms of what they consist of, there are four of them. They're 18 feet tall. Each one weighs 5,500 pounds. They are the same exact piece, except that they are installed differently. So there are two on the south lawn, one in the west sculpture terrace, and one on the north side of the building. And the metaphor that the artists developed was the idea that the Nelson Atkins building, which is very stalwart, neoclassical, Beaux-Arts building, exquisite building, but very, very rectilinear, and that they needed to kind of play with it and soften it up. So the inspiration after they thought about lots of ideas, which again we'll talk about later, they came up with the idea of a game to be played on this grand lawn that they saw, beautiful green lawns for croquet and badminton all over the city. And they decided to make the Nelson Atkins building itself into the net and conceive it as a net. And then the game was taking place with among giants. And so therefore all of the badminton birdies had to be gigantic size.
And we're just little bugs.
Yes, and we're just tiny little creatures.
Mark Wilson, you were director of the Nelson Atkins Museum of Art in 1994. It's hard to believe it's been 20 years since the shuttlecocks appeared on that lawn. When you think back on that time when the public first encountered those sculptures, what really jumps out for you 20 years later?
How much the public has embraced them over the years.
So the change since then is what you really, what really stands out?
Well, first of all, I thought they were brilliant. They were beyond any work of art that Klaus or Kosha had ever created. They had taken things from ordinary lives, a jackknife, for example, and placed them in plazas, as Jan said, upsetting the notion of the traditional monument. But what about the shuttlecocks are rather different from that, because no other Oldenburg works so intimately with its site as the shuttlecocks, and that's why it's more successful. Many of the others you could put in another plaza, and they would be equally successful. But the shuttlecocks need the Nelson building. They need the Nelson grounds, and the Nelson needs the shuttlecocks.
Well, yeah, go on.
And it's Jan has emphasized the playful element, and that is there are many valid reasons to like them. There is whimsy. But I would take it beyond whimsy into something a little more serious, because it's not just about whimsy that has no significance or meaning, but it's when playfulness or whimsy challenges the imagination and takes you into another world of reality, and when that becomes an avenue actually to a rather more serious, if not necessarily heavy, rethinking of the world. It's kind of like Lewis Carroll and Alice in Wonderland, and where that can lead you into a world of the imagination in your own head, where the metaphor of the game and these giant shuttlecocks that are completely out of scale with us, completely out of scale with a very formal building, where the metaphor turns into a new reality.
And do you think we're living in that new reality?
Yeah, well, I think it depends upon the individual who comes, and that's the beauty of them. It's like, you know, when you were learning chemistry, in high school, you learned about them multivalent. Well, they are multivalent. It depends on who you are, what your background is, how you feel that day, whether you're in a good mood, a bad mood, a grouchy mood. It's everything happens there. From some people who don't like them even today, who they just can't get with the idea that this is art.
Can we talk about that, though? Because
yeah.
I do remember, I was a teenager at the time, but I remember a very prevalent feeling in the city that the shuttlecocks were kind of a joke and people didn't really take them seriously as art. But they also weren't quite ready to not take them so seriously either. I'd say maybe aghast might be a word I would use. But I don't remember the details of the response, only the mood. Can you flesh it out for us from your perspective?
From my perspective, it was actually – well, to say it was vociferous is kind of mild. It was actually – got very bitter, very personal, very ad hominem, and very vicious.
What were some of the things that happened?
I received letters of threatening. The Soslins received letters threatening them.
The Soslins being the funders?
The people whose brainchild this was, Morton and Adele. This is their brainchild.
Tell me actually in lay terms about the process of commissioning a project like this, particularly working with artists who work on an international scale, such as Oldenburg and Van Bruggen.
Well, when this happened, the sculpture park had been open. Remember, at that time it was called the Henry Moore Sculpture Garden. Sculpture park had been open about a year, 2 years. And Morton Soslin had served on the board of the Hall Family Foundation. And the Hall Family Foundation, together with the park departments, were behind this, along with the Nelson. It was a three-way partnership. So very quickly, Morton said, well, we had always intended, this is not going to be stable. This is going to be, we want more. We want different kinds of art. We want more dimensions, more faces. And so he came to me and said, I have had this idea of commissioning Klaus Oldenburg to do a sculpture for the Nelson, perhaps using the front lawn. And I said, that's great. Let's go for it. And I had recalled, first of all, I knew Oldenburg's work, so that was not an issue. But many years earlier, in the late 70s, there had been some talk of having Oldenburg do a work on the front lawn, a billiard table with billiard balls, gigantic billiard balls out in the Nelson's front lawn. Well, I said, okay, you know, that didn't go anywhere. And I said, oh, Oldenburg's right. Go for it, Morton. So Morton did exactly what Morton does, goes for things. And Klaus came back a few months later. And we, Estelle Soslin, Morton Soslin, and I met in a room that no longer exists. And Klaus popped on us his sketches and designs for the badminton birdies and why he thought they were the best. He brought models of each one and spread them out. And he brought his drawings and his ideas and tying them to Charlie Parker, Yardbird. He called them Yardbirds at first.
Huh.
Yeah.
I heard also that there was a connection with some objects from the Native American collection.
Well, there were, but also at Liberty Memorial. You remember, do you know the sphinxes on either side of Liberty Memorial?
Yeah.
Those were prominent in his thinking because he traveled around Kansas City trying to draw some inspiration from the scenes and sights of Kansas City. And that influenced him a great deal. The image of, and if you look at those, they are in fact the image they had with the weeping sphinx wings, looks kind of like a shuttlecock upside down.
Huh.
So he, and as soon as Morton and Estelle and I saw the models, his idea, we said, ah, this is it. This is magic. And it was that when you know that you can see the something that has never existed, but that you know it's right. And that doesn't happen very often.
So the funders, the curators, and the artists were all sort of in cahoots on this.
Absolutely. We saw that the Soslins, the two Soslins, myself. At that time, the curator wasn't even involved. It was Deborah Scott. And we looked at that and said, oh, my God. I looked at it. I thought, this is brilliant. This is it. And I knew the people would – some people would object because there's the Nelson, which stands for stable culture – it's a building that says authoritative civilization, thanks to its neoclassical style. It's a very severe example, as a matter of fact. And that we would have what I would call the battle of contemporary art. And the battle of contemporary art is that contemporary art is, most of it, not art.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Central Standard on KCUR 89.3 FM. I'm Gina Kaufman talking with Mark Wilson and Jan Schall about the shuttlecocks on the lawn of the Nelson Atkins Museum of Art. They turned 20 this summer, and we're looking back on a truly evolving relationship between the city and these sculptures. In 1994, the grounds of the Nelson were actually owned by the city's park department. Is that right?
Yes.
So how did that complicate the relationship between artistic freedom and the public's response to a pretty bold, unconventional idea?
It did, because, of course, the parks department was our landlord. But we had had a very good, and still have, a very good relationship with the parks department, because together, I mean, we were all partners in the development of the first phase, which was the Henry Moore Sculpture Park, and that was a beautifully designed, brilliantly designed sculpture park by the foremost, you know, landscape designers in the United States at the time, Dan Kiley, teamed with Jack Robertson. Dan Kiley was, you know, the dean of landscape architects at the time. He's now gone. But we worked very carefully and very closely, and we worked out a lot of issues. There were a lot of design issues originally, but we had most of those behind us. But I think, you know, I'm going to call them unsung heroes in the shuttlecocks were Ollie Gates, who was head of the park commissioners at the time, and Bill Hall, who was president of the Hall Family Foundation. And Ollie was very worried about encroaching aesthetically on the park. But let me give Ollie great credit. In the end, he showed trust in me, trust in the museum, trust that this project, even though he didn't necessarily personally like it or it wasn't his kind of art, after all, this is for a museum, it's not for your living room, but Ollie went along with it, and Bill Hall did a brilliant job of communicating with the city and with the Parks Department.
Jan Schall, you arrived in Kansas City in 1996. The shuttlecocks had been in place for 2 years. How would you characterize the overall sentiment at that time?
Well, I think it was much tempered by 1996 when I arrived. Of course, I just fell in love with them, and I had seen them from a distance before, knew about them, was professor of art history and had taught, even had included them in my lectures before. So I was thrilled to be able to come to this museum and see them in place and experience them. And the sentiments were much more favorable. Definitely favorable by
just
that
time. Just 2 years later.
Just 2 years later. But we still would hear comments about those blankety-blank shuttlecocks every now and then, which always startled me that there was such a controversy. Of course, I had to go immediately into the files and really reconstruct that for myself so that I knew what was going on and what had been going on before my arrival.
What was your sense of that, having sort of reconstructed it, maybe not having felt it as personally, having been part of it, but looking through files and recreating it in your mind?
Well, to learn about the shuttlecocks was a great adventure, and eventually it led to an exhibition in the project space on the 15th anniversary of the shuttlecocks, where we put together all of the drawings that Klaus and Koja had given the museum, preparatory drawings, sketches, plans, beautiful array of objects and materials, and really looked at the invention of the shuttlecocks and how they conceived them, how the ideas involved and the many metaphors that were involved in it all. So it became really, it's really the motif that most represents not just the Nelson Atkins, but also the city of Kansas City.
I'm curious about that. You know, I wonder if you also recreated for yourself what happened in terms of public response and if you have a sense of how people's minds change like that.
Well, we did. We had a whole section of that little exhibition that really focused on some of the criticism, the negative cartoons in the Kansas City Star.
Could you describe one for us?
Oh my gosh, I can't really do that right now. But they were derogatory cartoons and mocking the shuttlecocks. And then that we also had selections from the letters to the editors that had appeared in the paper, and just to see that in that bit of time, 15 years, how opinions had changed dramatically, even though today, as Mark mentioned, there are still people who disagree with the fact that the shuttlecocks are there. But I think most people would say they are an asset to our city and to our museum.
It's natural that, I mean, it's hard to imagine a work of art that nobody objects to, that everybody out there likes. But what is it about the shuttlecocks that make people so invested and feel like they deserve, I mean, I think people feel they deserve a say in what that piece of our city looks like. It's a kind of interesting phenomenon. What do you think about that?
Well, I think any time you put art in a public place, and I mean public, it engages the public. And that's normal and it should happen. And I don't think any of us shy away from debates, because art has always been something that people talked about. And if it's in a public place, people are going to talk about it, and they're going to think about what it means for their city, for themselves, and they're going to have different opinions. And of course, when you have something as radically different and unexpected as giant badminton birdies on the lawn of the esteemed museum, it's going to be a kind of conflict of an oppositional relationship of art forms. And that's going to shake people up, because they think they know what art is about. And here's something that does not fit that definition at all. And you're going to have conflict. And eventually people come around. I mean, people who once hated them now say, you know, I love them now. They're so great. We love to have them here.
As a curator of modern and contemporary art, you must deal with a lot of controversial objects, and it's probably not totally uncommon for you to witness people scoffing at art based on this idea that for something to be art, it has to look a certain way. Have you ever witnessed this kind of transformation with another object, from maybe initial rejection to eventual interest and even excitement?
Not to the degree that we saw it with the shuttlecocks. You know, there are even works of art that are more traditional will still create a problem. I remember when we reinstalled the galleries, when we built the block building and then reinstalled the galleries in the Nelson Atkins, I got comments, letters, and notes that people would leave who had visited the gallery that contains primarily German and Austrian expressionist art. And they would say things like, that gallery needs to be reinstalled. It's so depressing and dark. Well, that's what German expressionism was about. And so, you know that the art has many things to say to us, and it's not all one-dimensional.
I went to the artist's website, to the Oldenburg and Van Bruggen website, And they write about, in their description of the shuttlecocks and how all of this unfolded and their beliefs about the works of art, they also mention the controversy that surrounded them. And they mentioned, in fact, that you were going to, that the museum was going to offer an art history course to the public. Is that accurate?
No. No, that grew out of a part of the discussion between Ollie Gates as commissioner, head of the commissioner, board of commissioners, and me. And it was something that I offered to give Ollie a course in Art History 101. And he used that to take me to task, rightly so, I might say.
Explain that, though. Do you think that the idea
to
that—
To try to put the, as Jan has done very well here, try to put the shuttlecocks in context, in a historical context of art, changes of art, and how the art world grows and introduces new ideas. Upsetting what went before, redefining what went before. And that was part of a joke that then made it into the newspapers, and it got called Art History 101. There was never a plan to. The museum always offers and always has since the day it was open, you know, courses on art history.
Well, do you think that was there any impulse to try to educate people about what these things were, or was there more of a,
Always. There's always, every time a great, you know, work of art is introduced, we always make all kinds of attempts. We bring in experts to give talks, tours, docents. Oh, we had teen guides specially trained to give tours. We offered acoustic guides of the sculpture park that included the shuttlecocks and so forth. No, there was that attempt, but why would these meet with greater public debate than the Mark Rothko, which was also roundly loathed when it was purchased?
Could you describe that painting for us?
Well, as the late Pat Allman described when it was purchased by the Friends of Art, it's a hole within a hole. Kind of a witty remark.
Yeah, that's
Pat. But it is a dark purplish rectangle within which are two other darker purplish rectangles. And people say, oh, well, that my grandkid could have done that. Well, I'm sorry your grandkid couldn't have done that because it's a matter of conception, not a matter of execution. But back to the shuttlecocks, they are in a public space in what is a very conspicuous piece of real estate in Kansas City in front of a hallowed institution. And with the public available and that park available to interact 24/7, no other work of art in the Nelson has been as interactive, has provoked as much personal reaction between visitors and the work of art as the shuttlecocks. And that, to me, whether you go away saying, dismissing them, saying, well, these are just silly, they're not really, they're stupid, or whether you go away loving them, being transformed, and finding a new world of yourself and your perception, doesn't matter. They have provoked an interaction with the public about art that is unequaled by any other work of art in the Nelson.
When I asked you at the beginning of the show what jumped out at you when you think back on 20 years ago, and you said that it's how much people's minds have changed. When did you start really noticing that? What were the signs?
Almost immediately. Because you look out, and I don't look at necessarily what the critics say or or a cartoonist, but it's what are the ordinary people doing? And I could see them because my office window overlooked that part of the park. And I could see just ordinary people reacting and coming up with children, dogs, frisbees. At first, they didn't know what to make them. They were playful. And it wasn't long before people understood that they could do all kinds of things. They could look at them how they wanted. But what was the icing on the cake? This kept going. Schools would bring children, and children would have their box lunches around the shuttlecocks. And I said, this is really wonderful. Obviously, people are interacting. They're getting something positive, something beneficial out of that interaction. But two things. When weddings began to occur under the shuttlecocks. Now, if somebody wants to get something as important, a rite of passage in life as a wedding, and they want to have that wedding that's so important to them at or beneath a shuttlecock, then you know you've really won over people's hearts.
I think that's right.
Number two is when the shuttlecocks start appearing on Monday Night Football in the, you know, when they do the newsreel part of, you know, the host city. And when the shuttlecocks are always prominent, then you know you've won. So between weddings and Monday night football, you know that you've got a good reception.
Well, with us by phone now is someone whose opinion of the shuttlecocks quite famously has not changed. Please join me in welcoming Kansas City Star columnist Yael Abuhalka to the conversation. Hi, Yael.
Hi, good morning.
What's your position on the shuttlecocks? Lay it out for us.
Oh, I mean, originally, I was actually looking at some pieces back in 93 when this was kind of, you know, thrust upon people. Shuttlecock kitsch was one of the headlines that one of the people put on one of the pieces I wrote. And it was at the time that, you know, there certainly was a defense of the south lawn of the Nelson, that, you know, that had been traditionally a lot of trees and grass and all that stuff. And one of the concerns that I had, and other people in the editorial board, I will say, was that this was going to kind of disrupt that. But, you know, I hear people wax on about the shuttlecocks and, you know, they're great pieces of art and all that stuff. At that time and even today, I think, well, of course, it could have been anything. I mean, you know, the artist could have come up with, as we've talked about at one point, giant bowling balls. It could have been crayons, which, you know, actually would have had something to do with Crayola and Hallmark and, you know, actually had something to do with Kansas City. And instead it was shuttlecocks, which have nothing to do with Kansas City. You know, and I know that certainly there are people who like them. There are maybe, I don't know if people have been transformed by them, but people do like them and think they're playful. But I think on the other hand, it's like, well, what if anything does this have to do with Kansas City? What does this have to do, actually, anything with art? And then that maybe is productive, because you'll think about that. On the other hand, it's also nothing that really has much to do with Kansas City, which has been one of my concerns all along.
Well, Yael, I'd like to ask that question, as long as we've got Jan Schall, who's the curator here. What do you think about that criticism, that this doesn't have to do with Kansas City?
It has to do with Kansas City, and also with much larger than Kansas City. It has to do with our whole region. Mark mentioned the Sphinxes at Liberty Memorial, which were an inspiration. But the inspirations, as that exhibition that I mentioned earlier revealed from all of the drawings and preparatory sketches for the shuttlecocks, I'm just going to run through a kind of laundry list of the ideas that were expressed visually in those drawings that led to this. An American Indian headdress. Think about the feathers and what that looked like. Farm windmills. White billowing covered wagons. The expansive green yards and lawns that we have all over the Midwest that they don't have in New York. Charlie Yardbird Parker, the great jazz saxophonist. Amelia Earhart's flight. James Naismith's invention of basketball. In fact, some of the original drawings, when they were thinking about what kind of a game could happen, really were about basketball. And if you look at the shuttlecocks, why is the head of the shuttlecock orange? Because originally it was a basketball going through the hoop, and it gets transformed, and they're constantly metamorphosizing these ideas. So in all of those manifestations, they really were thinking about not just Kansas City proper, but the Midwest and what the westward movement meant to our nation.
So less of a direct reference and more of a conceptual reference.
Very, very strong conceptual.
Yeah, are you won over?
Well, no, good. Actually, most of those sound better than shuttlecocks. That's interesting. You know, at the time they were talking about, I remember talking to Mark Wilson at the time, and other people too, saying, well, you think of the Nelson as a net, and you know, the shuttlecocks have landed on one side or the other or whatever. I was like, well, okay, that's above my head, but that's okay. But some of the ideas that were just mentioned, actually, you know, like a Midwest thing or whatever, would be interesting. And I'm not, again, don't get me wrong, it's one of these things where I had to be drawn in to take Art 101. I remember dragging my 3-year-old daughter with me at the time, and I think it was Mark, but somebody had to give me Art 101 to explain to me why this was being done, and it was interesting, but it's also like, what does it have to do with Kansas City? I mean, again, all the ideas just expressed, most of them would have had kind of maybe been almost more interesting to me than shuttlecocks would. Not saying that's to everybody, but at least to me it would be.
You've written a recent column expressing that you do like the new glass labyrinth on the lawn of the Nelson?
Yes.
How do you feel about the idea that a space like this can contain some things you like and some things you don't happen to care for? Are the shuttlecocks more obligated to please because they have such a visible presence in our cityscape?
I think one of the things that people point out, and I think is correct, that once something gets here, Kansas Cityans learn to love something. You know, like the hair curlers on top of, if you remember some of that, again, there were some opponents at the time, although actually I was not one of them, hair curlers in Bartle
and
Hall.
When you say hair curlers, you're talking about the Sky Stations.
Yes, the Sky Stations. But I think people start to learn to embrace things. Now, I embrace that glass thing, one, because I personally love glass. I mean, I just think glass buildings are neat. I think not necessarily all the modern ones, but like the Stars is interesting. The H&R Block one downtown, some of the more modern use of glass is interesting. And I think it's a good use of the space. It does attract people. And actually, if anything, to me, I guess it would complement. It's another thing where if people do like the shuttlecocks and they say, oh, hey, this is something playful, so was the labyrinth. I think it's playful. So I think you now have a couple things that are probably working with each other. So I would say, in my mind, the labyrinth enhances or at least helps make possible the continuation of the shuttlecocks, you know, even to opponents like myself.
Interesting.
Or critics like myself. I don't know an opponent. But, you know, they're not going anywhere.
When you publish a column expressing distaste for the shuttlecocks, what's the response to that? What do you hear from people about it?
Actually, the first thing I heard back was from Steve Kraske, who said, you're crazy. These are great. Because it usually comes on Twitter anymore, the first responses. But in general, I think it goes along those, I'm almost going to say, art-non-art lines, where artists say, hey, you know, you need to embrace things, you need to open your mind to things, which I think is true. I certainly do get, praise or whatever for continuing to express dismay about something that's 20 years old. Now, I think, you know, those are maybe fewer, and they're also kind of like me, old curmudgeons to a degree. But I also don't think just because something's been around a long time means you necessarily have to embrace it. I can certainly embrace that other people have, and I understand that. I think that's, you know, I think that's good.
Well, Yale, thank you so much for joining us.
Sure. Thank you for having me on, and good luck on the show. I appreciate it.
Thanks. We are going to take a break shortly, but I want to give Mark Wilson, who's been sitting here quietly, an opportunity to respond to what we were just saying.
I disagree with Yale on one fundamental thing. The implication that something has to do with Kansas City to be valid. I think quite the opposite. Just imagine if the Nelson were a museum just full of works of art that could, whose justification were that they had something to do with Kansas City. Why have this great Chinese collection? We have no great Chinese population here. What's the argument for Egypt? My point is that a place like the Nelson has an obligation to bring the whole world, to bring the familiar, that's what we already know, but to open horizons. Opening horizons in a city, like Kansas City, is one of the most important things we can do. That's my argument.
We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll want to hear from you. When the shuttlecocks landed on the lawn of the Nelson, what was your reaction? How do you feel about them now? Do you engage with them? Call us at 816-235-2888 to join this conversation about what has become an emblem of our city. We'll be back in a few. Welcome back to Central Standard. I'm Gina Kaufman, here with curator Jan Schall and director emeritus of the Nelson Atkins, Mark Wilson, who is the active director of that museum when the shuttlecocks arrived 20 years ago. We're taking your calls at 816-235-2888, excuse me, or you can tweet to join the conversation. Our Twitter handle is at KCURCST. And Jan, while we're lining up those calls, could you tell us a little bit more about the curatorial perspective on these shuttlecocks?
Well, curator, the word curator means to care for, and I use that word both ways. So there's the physical caring, but it's also the historical caring and the scholarly caring. But there's also the personal passion caring. So on many levels, we're caring for the shuttlecocks. And on a technical level, of course, we have an amazing staff of conservators who have done fantastic work to keep the shuttlecocks looking beautiful at all times. And some of that work was at the beginning structural. Some things had to happen because of how they were constructed. They actually were built at a shipping company, a shipyard that makes big ships. And so they used kind of nautical ways of constructing. And some of that didn't hold up as well and had to be replaced in the middle, the kind of interior sections. And so our conservators were in charge of that. But from our standpoint as curators, it's really about talking about them, helping people come to understand them, explaining them in a context which includes the whole of modern and contemporary art, and that sort of thing.
And Mark, right as we were going to break, you were talking about whether it is important for something positioned as the Shuttlecocks are to reflect Kansas City in a very direct and specific way. And what do you think that expectation, do you think it has something to say about Kansas City's overall attitude toward art?
I think that Kansas City's overall attitude toward art has changed a lot in the last decade. I mean, look at Crossroads. There's another example, and not just the visual arts, but Kansas City is, I would say, after Chicago, among the inland cities, number two for the visual arts in terms of artists working. That is an enormous catalyst for a city. And I'm pointing again to the Crossroads, just the transformation of that and the social transformation. So I think the city has come a long way. It's come a long way in music. It's come a long way in dance. Several good dance companies, music everywhere. Look at theater. Casey Rep. Kansas City's come a long way. And why has it come a long way? Because of the introduction of new ideas, not just hanging on to old conventional ideas, but a willingness to say, right, the unfamiliar isn't so scary. Let's get out there. This is exciting. And you can lead from Kansas City.
Let's hear from Paul in Lansing. Hi, Paul.
Hi. I was just interested in the parochial aspect of it. What about the pyramid on the Louvre? Look at the parochial response the supposed cosmopolitan Parisians gave, or for that matter, when the Eiffel Tower went up. What was their first thinking on that?
This is interesting.
I'll take my answer up here.
Yeah, you know, this idea that maybe being is an initial response that is strong part of a process, just a human process.
Well, remember that this is not something we have seen before. That is, it's not conventional. And everything we have not seen before takes getting used to. And whether it's the Eiffel Tower, and it also shows you that provincialism and parochialism are not confined to smaller cities. I mean, the Parisians are very parochial about more than just their architecture, too.
Yeah, this idea of something being different is really interesting. Let's turn to Joe in Kansas City. Hi, Joe.
Hello.
What would you like to share?
My comment was, I loved them 20 years ago, and I loved the whimsy of them, and I loved the symbolism of them, and I think a lot of people did. And 20 years later, I still rather liked them, but I think I would have loved them better as something that was temporary because of that. I find everything else there, Roxy Payne's work and Henry Moore's and the Colby, it's all so very serious and I think deep. And I find something superficial about the Shuttlecocks, even though they're whimsical, even though I still love them. When I tend to take other architects down there from out of town that are unaware of them, they drive by them and they say, wow, how long are they going to be here? And I say, well, about 20 years they've been here. They're a little surprised, many of them.
So I want to just clarify, you mentioned that you feel there's a superficiality in them, but that you also really like them sometimes and that people you bring to town are impressed by them. I wonder if, are you also kind of saying that maybe it's not, you're not always in the mood for the mood they set?
No, I just think that as a piece of whimsical thing, it's we in such a serious place that has so much depth and meaning to us, we're willing to accept them as something temporary. But as something permanent 20 years later, I'm still not quite ready to say those should always be there.
Interesting. What's the thought that goes into determining whether something becomes a permanent feature of the landscape there or if something is perhaps a temporary thing?
Well, I'll get to that. This was a commissioned work of art. So from the beginning, we knew it was going to be ours forever. It was not we have temporary exhibitions, and we'll have something coming up in the future that will be temporary, that will be on in the sculpture park. But and we do the same thing inside. We have temporary exhibitions that come and go, and we have our permanent collection, and the shuttlecocks are part of our permanent collection. And they're so valuable because they offer a different perspective. Not everybody has the same eyes. Not everybody has the same mind. People like different kinds of art. Some people, you know, even in terms of the curatorial world, I mean, Mark, a scholar of Chinese art, passionate about Chinese art. I love it too, but I'm passionate about modern and contemporary art as well, and all of the art history. And so every single piece has something to tell us, some way that can change our outlook on the world, that can cause us to understand our culture in a different way, that can provoke thought, can provoke feeling, and can make us laugh, can make us cry. I mean, we're multidimensional. So when you have works of art that can speak to all of our aspects of what it means to be human, I think we've done a good job with that.
And Mark, this idea that Joe mentioned that the shuttlecocks don't have the same seriousness as the building, you've referred to that, and you seem to not entirely view them as not being serious.
Well, that's true. I don't. I think there's a very serious, very philosophical side to them. It gets into epistemology, what you know and how you know what you know.
Explain
the second
that.
Thing,
what,
but Joe,
how does it get into
this
that?
Is like his point is good, and it's a good provokes a conversation and an answer. One of the reasons for putting the shuttlecocks out there is because they do have a strong whimsical side, that is to send a message about the Nelson, that you don't have to get your armor on and get ready for a heavy duty intellectual jousting to go to the Nelson. You don't have to work yourself up to into this serious mood. Going to the Nelson should be every day. I mean, I can drop in for 20 minutes. It's free after all.
As ordinary as playing badminton?
Yeah. And why not change your idea about what a museum is, that it's an that it's going to have whimsy, that it's going to have things that are light, things that are heavy, things that are about death, things that are about life and fun. And if you go through there and look at the Nelson, you will see things that are extremely serious. But you also see whimsy in other works of art as well. A lot of poking fun, social comment. So I think the shuttlecocks were a very needed antidote to this idea that a museum is a heavy-duty experience and I've got to really work myself up to go there. I mean, it's not. It's in part, should be a part of your ordinary life. And that's my response. Not that that Joe's wrong. I mean, he's right. If he takes them that way, that's him. Speaking philosophically, if we look at 100 years from now, anything is up for change. The way the building, works of art may come, may go. The building may change. They will be reinstalled, rethought, to meet the needs of future generations. So future generations will be the ultimate judge.
Let's hear from Jake in South Kansas City. Hi, Jake.
Yes, a pleasant good morning. I've got to admit, I was an original Philistine, but the scales fell from my eyes pretty quickly. And I want to say thanks for taking the step and doing it 20 years ago. And then a question. I can't imagine, you know, the Nelson without him now. And then, is there going to be another badminton tournament to observe the 20th anniversary? That was an absolute gas. And, you know, the wrapped sidewalks, you know, Christo comes to mind, and everybody up in arms over that. And his body of work is just killer. He and Jean-Claude. And
Jake, in case some of our listeners don't know who Christo and Jean-Claude are and maybe weren't here when those sidewalks were wrapped, can you tell that story?
Well, I don't know how it came about that he decided to work with the city and the park department, you know, who were the movers and shakers, but it's been 15, 18, 20, 25 years ago, the blink of an eye, when he wrapped all of the sidewalks in Loose Park with a silky yellow fabric, and it was delightful, absolutely delightful. It was a temporary installation, obviously. And, you know, there was a big hoo-ha over that. But, my gosh, it's a, you know, major city park, and the delight it brought to untold tens of thousands of people, you know.
Yeah.
Just a killer.
Jacob.
I'm curious how the canyon wall is going, if anybody knows. And then I would like an answer about the badminton tournament. I'll be the first to sign up again.
Thanks, Jake. So we've got a lot of things to respond to from Jake. Let's start with, is there going to be a badminton tournament?
We have badminton tournaments periodically. I'm not sure if one is planned for this summer, but we do that periodically in the park as part of our annual Sculpture in Summer Family Day.
And then this Christo and Jean-Claude story, I don't want to get too hung up on it, but it does seem like maybe it can be instructive, and you're both familiar.
It's worth getting hung up on. This is a thing that was roundly rejected by the establishment in Kansas City. I can think of fewer things that have been more lyrical and more transformative, to use Yale Abahakas' word, than the wrapping of the walkways in 1979 at Luce Parkway with this saffron-colored, shiny fabric. Wrapping them meant putting down a pathway of the shiny, I think it may have been, I'm not sure, it was fiberglass. The project was sponsored by the Contemporary Art Society, organized by them with help from the Nelson and help from, obviously, the Parks Department, and an army of volunteer workers who helped Christo and Jean-Claude Yagachev basically staple this down to the grass along the sides. But as you sat there in the late afternoon and in the evening, the sun shimmering on that transformed that entire beautiful little park into a magic land. You were someplace different. You were not only transformed, but you were transformed by being transported in your imagination into a world that did not exist before and once it left after. And that is truly one of, I think, the more memorable artistic events in Kansas City's history. It got clobbered by a lot of people. The establishment clobbered it.
Is that instructive for us in terms of seeing maybe the shuttlecocks as, in fact, the response to the shuttlecocks being more open-minded
Well, I say the establishment, the art establishment, not artists themselves, but the critical establishment, clobbered, didn't like the wrapped walkways. But the people who were interested in contemporary art, the ordinary people voted. I mean, it was so well attended. Again, this is what I always say, trust the art and trust your audience. I trust the people and I trust the art.
Let's hear from Bonnie in Leawood. Hi, Bonnie.
Hi.
Please go on.
Oh, well, I have to say that I was shocked and disappointed when I first saw a shuttlecock on the lawn of the Nelson Gallery. In my opinion, the Nelson was just a place of dignity and class, and I could not believe seeing shuttlecocks on the lawn. In the first place, I didn't see that we needed anything on our front lawn. All the sculptures are grand and wonderful, but that I'm just one of those that doesn't happen to like it. I didn't like it then, and I still don't like it.
All right. Well, thank you for sharing that, Bonnie.
Uh-huh. Thank you.
And we've also got a call from Sonia in Kansas City. Hi, Sonia.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I moved here, so I just want to comment on the application of the shuttlecocks to Kansas City. I moved here from the west coast of Canada with huge mountain ranges and the ocean, and when I first landed, the first thing that struck me here was the vast openness of the field and the huge sky. And so when I saw the shuttlecocks, they immediately made sense to me to stand next to them, and I just like Mark commented about the fabric, I didn't get to experience that, but it was this fantastical, almost imaginative experience that invited me to go in to explore the Nelson. I thought, what is this place? This is so cool. And I'm also thankful, as Mark commented, that a museum, an art gallery is not, that the job is not to necessarily represent the city that it's located, but to expose citizens to the world, the art world, the geographical world. So that's my experience with the shuttlecocks. I think they are just amazing, and to become bored of them is one thing. That's a valid point, but maybe that's coming from somewhere else in your life. I don't know.
Thanks so much, Sonia. You know, that is kind of interesting. She came here from somewhere else and hadn't had a previous relationship from that vista, with that vista. Do you think that that affects how people see things, that they had, that there is a, either a pre-existing relationship or they're seeing it fresh?
I think so. I think anytime we come to something, we have our preconceived notions of what something is or of what our beliefs are, how we feel about things. I mean, we've built these up over a lifetime of thinking about things. And when we come to new places, we're open to everything that's new about it because we've left everything else behind. So we have no preconceptions, no idea of the way things should be when we come to a new place. And that makes us much more open. But when we've grown up with ideas or grown up with places and grown up with things, we tend to fall in love with them and hold them as the standard.
That's sadly all the time we have for this look back on the first 20 years of our relationship with the Shuttlecocks. Happy anniversary, Kansas City, and thanks for being here, Jan Schall and Mark Wilson. We also spoke earlier with Kansas City Star columnist Yael Abu-Halka. To listen back to today's show or any past conversations you've heard on Central Standard, go to kcur.org/centralstandard. And if you have pictures that are taken of the shuttlecocks that you'd like to send to us, we're collecting some of those, so email them to social@kcur.org. That's social@kcur.org. Tune in tomorrow for a visit to the Death Cafe. We'll get to know a community that's formed around a desire to connect around mortality and grief. We'll also hear thoughts on whether the Chiefs should change their name in light of the Redskins controversy. Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton and Sylvia Maria Gross. I'm Gina Kaufman. Stay tuned for Up to Date with Steve Kraske. That's coming up next.